Hello, everybody. Welcome to the episode number 6 of Voices from the Dark. Today, I don't have any announcements. It's except for it's a special show today. We have something today we're calling, for lack of a better name, the Babysitter Series. It's a comparative horror film series. And today I have with me Daniel the Chauffeur, as they call him on the streets, the dirty streets of Berlin. He's a fellow horror lover, and we're going to be talking about a particular type of horror slasher film called Better Watch Out. Now, we have a lot to say about this specific movie and also other movies that are very highly related to it. But we're not going to cover all that in this episode. So yeah, I guess maybe Daniel can say a little bit about himself before we, or, well, he's looking at me funny right now, so maybe you just tell, okay, I consider this movie to be a horror movie. It's called Better Watch Out, and I could look at the IMDb thing and read you the,
it says
yeah,
horror.
Yeah, but I could, no, but I, in terms of like what it's actually about, I can read that to you, but I think we should just try to keep it in our own words, and I think this movie is a horror movie, and I think that Daniel is a horror lover, but what do you think, Daniel, is a horror movie, or what is this particular movie to you?
Well, this is, let's say, a full home invasion movie. I wouldn't like to classify it as horror, because then, well, it gives me, it gives people a bad taste in the mouth. It's not as bad as or cheesy as most horror movies are, with a lot of strange creatures in them, and so it's just people that are evil here, and
right.
That's normally what I focus on in what I would say, well, are slasher movies. So with horror, you normally associate some kind of
supernatural thing,
supernatural creature, yes.
Yeah,
something that oozes slime on,
like Freddy Krueger, or, well, actually, those are slashers too.
Yeah,
and they're both supernatural.
Yeah,
in
Freddy Krueger is an exception. I'd say he's not. He has been human once, so
that is true.
But
so was Jason Voorhees and his mother.
Absolutely. Yes.
Well, his mother was always human, I guess.
No, she was the opposite of human.
Well, I mean, she was a human being, like flesh and blood human being. She wasn't like a supernatural creature.
You're right. Yeah. Yes, of course.
So, yeah. Yeah, I mean.
So, when people ask me if I love horror movies, I want to say no, because I think they associate horror movies with the wrong kind of movies that I don't really like to watch.
For example?
For example, that's a very good question, which I cannot answer at the moment,
so,
because I don't watch those.
No, yeah, true, true.
But it'll come to me.
Okay. Yeah, I think of it as a horror because it plays upon fear. And actually, I think that this movie, for sure, it's more of a slasher movie, but it's also a horror tribute, because I really do think that there's a lot of things going on. For example, the music, a lot of the time, it's very, very subtle, which I like a lot. The music, to me, sounds like something that you would find in Halloween, like John Carpenter, sort of, you know, minimalist keyboard, Casio keyboard music, or the kind of dreamy music that you find in Nightmare on Elm Street. So I feel like they're playing on that, but
yeah, but actually those are not the tunes you notice. The Christmas songs are the
ones. No, of course, yeah.
The Christmas songs are the ones that stick out.
And we should say, you know, I could read the IMDb description to you, but it doesn't do it justice. So it's a Christmas horror, a Christmas slasher for sure. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely,
okay.
Yes.
So it's a Christmas slasher for sure, yeah.
And there is nothing better than to discuss a Christmas movie when it's 90 degrees Fahrenheit or 32 degrees Celsius outside. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, it's cold outside today. Oh, by the way, we're in Berlin. We're in the Noisy Rooms rehearsal space, which is it's my first time here, and I think Daniel's as well. I like to talk about where we are because it's a podcast, and you can do it anywhere.
Why they call these soundproof rooms noisy rooms?
Because they're noisy. Yeah, that's a good point. You just figured that out. I didn't realize that until you just said it. This is a Christmas slasher. Oh, by the way, before we get any further, of course, this is my first kind of movie-based media other than reviews that I've done, written out reviews. So we have to make a spoiler alert. We have to alert you to the spoilers that are coming. So we're going to basically discuss, not only in this episode, but in future episodes, all the movies that we're discussing, we're going to be destroying them for you if you've never seen it. So this is a movie, this is a podcast for people who have seen the movie. So better watch out. If you haven't seen it, stop this right now and watch it wherever you watch movies. Okay. So.
Yeah, we're totally going to spoil it because everything, we could only discuss 30 minutes off the movie if we wouldn't want to spoil it.
Did you see the trailer?
That's the point.
The trailer was they really, really hide the actual story, and I think that's great, especially for this movie, since you don't get the whole story right at the beginning. And that's what actually defines this movie for me, is not only the secrets, but it's their role reversals. The roles are being reversed from the beginning, and I feel like this is a huge aspect of the character of this movie. This movie is about role reversals and flipping everything on its head, almost I don't know how to describe that, or if there's an analogy for that.
And they managed to do that within 3 minutes, actually, from minute 30 to 33. The main character absolutely changes character.
Yeah. Definitely.
That is what is going to spoil this movie for you if you don't know.
Yeah, so this particular movie is going to be particularly spoiled because it does hide so much when you look at the trailers and stuff. So first, before we go more into the movie itself, I think since I mentioned, and this is all part of my master plan for this conversation, because, I don't know, I wrote it down on these pink cards that I have. All Christmas horror movies are inherently role reversals, from the fact that they are horror movies set during Christmas time. Horror movies are about fear and danger and death and Christmas, although it's about death, the death of Jesus.
What?
Oh, my God, it's about his birth. I'm such a terrible... Well, that's why I'm an atheist. But anyway, I'm a terrible person. I'm a very terrible... No, but it is about death because it's about why is... it's we celebrate Jesus not because he was born, but because he died for our sins. But I don't want to get into that. So the movie is about joy, right? And it actually starts out with the song Joy to the World, which is very typical for Christmas movies. But I just want to point out that a Christmas horror movie is a role reversal no matter what.
Absolutely.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, but it starts with Joy to the World, but there is a juxtaposition there because we see a kid who has just finished a snowman.
Yes!
Another kid decapitates that snowman.
With a baseball bat. So it starts out with a murder.
Absolutely.
Frosty is murdered.
It starts out with a decapitation.
A decapitation.
Which will play a role later. There
more or less, yeah.
Another decapitation.
Yeah, for sure there's another...
In the movie. Yeah, we don't really see if the person later is decapitated, but he was also hit with a baseball bat.
Yes, twice.
Before that,
twice.
So it starts actually with Joy to the World. That's what the sounds will want to tell us, but the pictures tell us that kids are evil.
Yeah, exactly. and that whole thing, kids are evil, is a reversal, right? As well, you know, because especially for during Christmas time. So let's say, okay, who are the characters? The babysitter is Ashley, and she's the first person besides the snowman murderer that we see. There's all shots of, like, you know, the neighborhood, people putting up lights or taking lights down or messing with their lights and, I don't know, other suburban shit. We see Ashley, right?
Yes, in her car.
In her car.
And she's phoning her mother, telling her mother that she will go to Pittsburgh and she won't come for Christmas. She will leave the city for Pittsburgh to go study there, yep. I think. And, as she's driving, a black cat runs in front of her car. And I tried to research that. Black cats should run from, let me check it, I think left to right, from left to right, which is a bad omen in Germany. And even the Wikipedia entry says it's a bad omen in Germany. I don't know about other countries. That was one of the things
left
I was
to
going
right.
to ask. Yes.
I mean, for me, you should never, like, the kind of, what do you call that? The superstition.
It's right to left.
It doesn't matter, because the superstition for me, whether it's right to left or left to right in Germany, for me, it's if they cross your path at all.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no, it doesn't matter with the direction. So maybe it's the American, or I'm speaking for the whole country here, but, you know, maybe the American version is just like more open, more watered down, or however you want. So it doesn't matter if it's left or right. But black cats for sure are considered in a lot of literature with Edgar Allan Poe, you know, they have this sort of magical quality. And then witches, you know, I don't want to get too much into all that stuff. Witches have familiars, which are, you know, generally either cats or frogs, black cats.
So
black cat, sure. So.
Her drive there starts with a bad omen.
Yeah.
And that black cat reappears later in the movie.
Does it?
Shortly,
I missed that.
Shortly before murder. And it watches that murder being committed and it purrs.
Wait, which murder?
It purrs.
Which murder? You can say which murder it is.
Okay, the hanging of Jeremy, the stupid ex-boyfriend.
Oh, shit, yeah.
It runs in front of him from right to left when he's on the swing.
You know, I think that you might be onto something with this whole German thing. I mean, to me, these people... Okay, let's get to the next character since I'm about to mention him. He, his name is... Or his family name is Lerner, which to me is a German name. Right?
Yep. Or,
yeah. And so he looks like, you know, a typical kind of white German looking. I mean, he's dark hair, but he's you know, these are Germanic people. Maybe except for Ricky. Ricky looks like he's like, you know, Italian or some kind of Latino or something.
Interesting.
And he calls him a greaseball and a mongrel at some point.
Mongrel,
which
yeah.
is quite. Fucked up,
yes.
But
the movie starts with language because when it's not enough that one kid decapitates the snowman, the other kid calls that kid a buttfucker.
Oh man, I missed that too.
And it starts with language. So
I have a. You mean vulgar language? You mean yeah?
Yes.
I thought you meant
no.
With plays on with language, with
language, like language.
Yeah, language, Mister. Yeah. So Ashley is the babysitter, and she's on her way to babysit on her last day in the city, which I thought was a little bizarre that they had to make it this way. But in some way, her leaving the next day actually does make this kind of story work. Because if the kid, the babysat kid, Lucas Lerner, if this is his last chance to do what he wants to do with his babysitter. And we there's a lot of changes. We think that he wants one thing, but then really we find out that he wants something else at the end, which is not unrelated to decapitation. So what else? We got the babysitter, the kid. There's a best friend. He's like plotting with Lucas in the beginning. His name is Garrett. And these two kids are filthy mouth kids. You know, they're talking about...
Absolutely.
horror movies get girls wet and blah, blah, blah. Fear makes girls wet, he says.
And I, yes.
And they're like trying to prove this to each other. And apparently they have these like arguments, and they bring up one of the main arguments that they have in the beginning of the movie is whether or not the paint can in Home Alone would have actually just knocked the guy's head back like it did in the movie.
Knocked the guy over on the chair.
Yeah. Or would it have destroyed his entire head? And that comes up quite a bit in the movie.
Yeah. So what they do later, committing these murders, is actually, well, for them, like a science experiment.
In a way. I mean,
Mythbusters.
The problem with that is that both these two kids, although we think that they're like united in the beginning, turns out that they're not united at all. And this one kid, Lucas, who you would call the main character, and who we are tricked into having, sympathy for him, even though there are hints along the way before we find out that he's a psycho killer. There are hints that show us that he is not as gentle as he appears. But for sure, the filmmakers are showing us that he's also gentle. But actually, if you really look at each one, what I'm referencing is that he and his friend Garrett are talking about women in sort of a kind of like, you know, Trumpian way, just to make this show relevant in some way. they're talking about like, you know, basically having sex with girls and not coercing, but coaxing them and like, you know, manipulating them into having sex, specifically the babysitter. And, you know, we get this sense that they're like kind of dirty minded, but then like the mother shows up and she's like coddling her son, even though he hates it. Very clearly he hates it.
Stop. She's yep. not coddling her son at the beginning of the movie. That's one of the most important topics.
Yes. No, coddling meaning like she's like...
Oh, sorry. I misunderstood.
I mean, yeah. But you're absolutely right that this is a story about... a white heterosexual male not getting enough love from his mother, so he has to, you know, kill his babysitter. Yeah. I know it's a little political the way I said it, but that's...
I would even go further.
Oh, okay.
And say that the topic of this movie is actually that Luke has got some kind of Oedipus complex. He has a fetus machine.
Yes, so the fetus machine. Yes, so bizarre.
Fetus sound machine.
Yes,
he's going to. He always going to sleep with. He wants his mother at. One time in the movie, he says that he wants his mother to hold him mm-hmm. like she did before, but his mother never seems to touch him anymore.
Yeah.
And he has.
He tells that to his babysitter.
He tells that to his babysitter
right before she.
Yes.
He kills her.
And so what I think is, this kid wants back into the womb, or at least. Penetrate his mother in some other way.
Oedipus complex.
And yes, and since he can't have his mother, he takes the next best thing, the babysitter.
Yes, the mother substitute.
And in a way, he never gets to have sex with her, but he, in a way, at the end, he gets
Does he want to, though? I think his whole plan...
I think he's giving it up. There is a point where he gives up that plan. I'm going to talk about that in 30 seconds.
Okay.
But I just want to end before I lose. I think I already lost. Wait.
It's a very complex movie because what happens is that...
Oh, yeah, sorry. I get it. So in the end, he gets two things done. He gets to penetrate his babysitter
with
a knife in the neck, yes.
And he's in ecstasy, I think, when he does that.
Absolutely.
If you look at his face, he's like, his eyes kind of roll up a little bit.
Yeah. And his mother, after all the strange shit happened there, is cuddling him again, and he's happy. So he totally accomplishes what he's set out for. But I think what
metaphorically,
metaphorically, yes.
Except for the mother, she actually does hug him.
Yeah. But maybe what has to be pointed out is that he and his friend Garrett have totally different plans how that evening will go down.
Yeah.
Garrett thinks he just wants to seduce the babysitter, and he's absolutely flabbergasted when he sees that Luke is actually on a killing spree.
Yeah, the first time that he's flabbergasted is when Luke is when the jig is up, and Ashley figures out that they have set up this an entire home invasion film for us. Like they actually like they are create like the creator of the movie has created a story where the main character creates a home invasion scenario to trick his babysitter into having sex with him. So supposedly, you know, this is what Garrett thinks. I think that Lucas never had that in mind. I think that he never wanted to have sex with her. He just wanted to kill her. He wanted to kill her because she was leaving. And even that last scene, that not the last scene, but the scene where he smiles as his mother is holding him after she has discovered all these dead bodies around, he smiles and it seems like, job well done. I did this. I got my mother to hug me again. But I think what he's really thinking is, I got away with this. And he's smiling because of that, because his mother is going to now defend everything that he says. And he knows that, and he planned that from the beginning. He set up so many things through his mother. And I'm going to tell you, starting from that fetus machine, he doesn't care about that. He might be embarrassed about it, but it's a tool for him. It's a tool for him to signal to his mother that he is some kind of, like, baby. Like, he's a child, and he could never do this. And then he also tricked her into thinking that he's a sleepwalker so that she can also reinforce her own thoughts that my son needs to be kept a track of and this is how I'm going to do it. And he allows this to happen. You know, she puts a pencil in the door and instructs the babysitter. And this is another insane part. She instructs the babysitter to, after he goes to bed, after you give him the sleeping pill, that she should put the pencil above the doorknob so that if Lucas comes out, we know that he came out, you know, because he's sleepwalking. And, I mean, it's a stupid trick, and it wouldn't work unless he was actually really sleepwalking. And if he stays in his room the whole night, then we're certain that he did not sleepwalk and he stayed in his room all night. So he's creating alibis for himself. He's creating, you know, all the, and he plans out all this evidence. It's insane. He planned out this whole thing. It was hidden us from the, it was hidden from us the whole time, from Garrett, obviously from his parents, obviously from everyone else. But he orchestrated everything. And I would love to be able to like go through every detail, you know, to.
At one point, there is a brick thrown into a window upstairs, and no one of the present people downstairs could have done it. So we are tricked into thinking there must be a danger from outside.
Yes. That's the home invasion thing, yeah.
Yes.
And he does a lot of things like that.
Yes.
Like the car lights, what does he use? There are car lights that blast into the front door and the windows on the side of the front door so that it looks like someone has driven up to the front of the door, of the front of the house with a car and has turned their lights at full blast. He used a independent light source, which he brings in later on.
Oh, right.
And Garrett doesn't even notice it. Like, Garrett doesn't even know that, like, he's doing half of his shit.
He also doesn't know about the catapult that was throwing the brick into the window that was somehow remote controlled. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a lot of remote controlled shit. He's got, like, maybe not cameras, but he's got, like, some kind of a pellet gun or a...
Yeah.
What do you call these? Paint gun?
Paintball? Like,
paintball gun?
Paintball gun, yeah. I think this is all in reference to Home Alone, because they even made a verb of this in the movie. Garrett says to Luke, oh no, are you home aloning again?
Yeah, are you home aloning him?
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Or again.
No, I'm pretty sure he says him, because he's like,
oh,
because he's saying, like, you're going to do this to him. You're going to, because he's never home aloned anybody before. Home alone means to,
you're right.
The verb to home alone means to throw a campaign and paint cane.
A paint can.
Oh my God. A paint can. Thank you.
Campaign. That's
a can of paint. That was terrible. It's like some kind of aphasia. No, obviously not. So yeah, I mean, this movie is super deep. I mean, we can talk about this for hours.
Absolutely. We were talking about cats.
In the beginning.
And there is something else I would like to talk about.
Okay.
And that's spiders.
Yes.
Because in the next
tell me about
movie,
the spiders because. Wait. Oh,
we're gonna discuss.
Yeah, in Babysitter.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if I say too much now, but
no, I think it's okay. You can do pre-spoilers. So he's gonna pre-spoil a movie.
There are also spiders in the next movie, and they got a totally different role there, and the protagonist has a totally different relation with them. And popular Freudian mythology, spiders are a symbol of the female
genitalia.
Spiders. Yes. So fear of spiders is actually fear of
female genitalia. The vagina.
Yeah. And fear of the mother. And this boy in this movie, so it fits
in Better Watch Out.
In Better Watch Out, has a spider he uses and he loves. So this would actually prove Freud right after all, they did it probably because people who have an Oedipus complex, who wanna
get have sex with their mom,
intimate with their mothers.
You can say hit their mom.
And I love this. I love this thought because I hate spiders. People who love spiders want to have sex with their moms.
People who love spiders.
Yes.
Okay.
Because spiders are a symbol of.
I guess I should say I don't love spiders. I don't mind them, but I don't love them.
Probably the best thing is to be indifferent.
Yeah, indifferent, yeah. So I love the fact that he has a spider that he has trained to do all sorts of things, like scare his babysitter. And, yeah, I mean, the goddamn spider is an accomplice, and he shows him taking care of the spider. And, you know, and that's one of the things that he or the creators of the film and the character himself uses to make himself look like he's a gentle person. Because he shows the girl, she's like the babysitter. She sees that's like the first or second jump scare. Is that the first jump scare? There's like...
The first one is, I think, the cat.
Yes.
If that really
that
is a jump scare.
That is technically a jump scare. So, yeah, it's one of the first few and definitely...
The cat in front of the car.
Yeah. And there's actually two sort of spider scares, not jump scares, one spider scare and one like, oh, there's something on me scare, you know?
When she falls down a ladder and he saves her.
Yeah, exactly. And this is...
But he has thrown the spider onto her before, but
he
didn't see that. Yeah.
She didn't see
it. In the dark.
Neither did I.
Yeah.
Neither did I.
He did it.
Oh, shit.
Okay.
No, I didn't see that. Yeah, that's why this is so much better to... either one of us could be sitting here in a podcast being like, I'm going to talk about this movie for an hour.
So actually,
but it's better when you have more than one person.
It's I think it epitomizes what his original plan might have been, throwing the spider on her and then rescuing her from the spider.
Mm-hmm.
It was like what we thought, faking a home invasion and then saving her from, rapists, robbers, whatever.
Yeah.
So I think the spider episode epitomizes that.
Definitely.
I'm not really sure if there isn't a moment.
But at that moment, we don't know. So when he throws a spider on her in the attic, they're hiding from the home invader. Who is Garrett? That's there. You know, this Garrett is in on it up to this point, but we don't know that yet. When they're in the attic, we think that this is a real home invasion. Like this is what the movie's about in a way.
Until Garrett gives himself away by scratching his back.
Yes, exactly. Because he does it throughout the movie.
Yeah.
And this is what she picks up on. She picks up on a bunch of shit, but she messes up every single time, which is that classic, you know, stereotype in movies of, you know, people just doing the wrong thing. And they mention it, which is why...
Like, they're going to the attic.
Yeah, and then she goes into the attic. Yeah. But the thing is, yeah, so this movie is a tribute to horror movies, to slashers, to all kinds of, you know, thrillers, crime thrillers, so on and so forth. They use everything, but they use it in a different way, you know, because of these hidden motivations, you know? Like, even Garrett is, like, his motivations are hidden, even, you know, it's like, he's following this kid, he's following Lucas to get Lucas laid for what, you know, it's like, he wants to have a best friend, you know? It's probably...
But later on, he gets quite jealous.
Garrett wants a piece, and actually he's like, how come jealous. You don't... Because they play Truth or Dare.
Yeah.
And that's another classic, you know, horror movie thing. It's like, or even just like, well, a lot of horror movies use Truth or Dare. For sure, they're, you know, planning on sexually violating her at this moment. Because now, at that point, they've already been found out. She found out about what they have done with the fake home invasion. And she threatened to, you know, so-called get them in a lot of trouble, or to get Lucas in a lot of trouble, which is what spurred him to pistol whip her. He pistol whips her. That is when I was shocked, because that movie hid that for me so well. And only for that split second I was shocked for a split second, and then I was like, holy shit. And I was like, this kid really wants to rape her. And then I still didn't know what he really wanted to do, which I do believe is that he didn't want to have sex with her. He wanted to kill her from the beginning. That was his plan the whole time. He wanted to kill all of them, even his friend. He pretends. No, sorry. He doesn't pretend. He kills his friend later on when his friend tries to help Ashley. But I think that he... I'm losing my train of thought. I think that he... didn't want to kill his friend, but he did in a way, and then he also knew that he had to. And so when he did kill him, he was genuinely distraught by that, but immediately he's like, he was starting to annoy me anyway.
Yes.
Which is like, I mean, come on, you were just freaking out that you killed your friend and that your best friend. And
yeah, like every psycho, he's perfect... in switching from one mood to the opposite.
Exactly.
Mood.
Yeah.
But I don't really know if there isn't a point in the movie where it could have been, where the whole killing spree could have been avoided. I'm not really sure if she had sex with him, if he wouldn't have gone through with all that.
Oh my God, that's a good question. I didn't think of that.
So, yes, he's got everything prepared. He did make advances. Yeah. He's got all these contraptions out there to kill everybody. But I'm not sure what would have happened, because there is one point at the. I think this is so beautiful about the movie, because in the first 30 minutes we suffer with him when she calls him
a kid over and over,
doofus,
over and over and over. Yeah.
Yes, so she degrades him. I mean, he's well, only no,
she's
12
actually,
years old.
She's at, yeah, he's turning 13 in a couple of days.
I'm turning 13. Yeah. I mean, he's got this voice.
Yeah, his voice is cracking all the time.
Which is really funny. Because whenever he wants to say something serious, his voice breaks. Yeah. So we suffer with him, and
go on.
The peak of suffering with him, the peak of empathy, is when she makes him a compliment after he made a joke, you crack me up. And then about 25 seconds later, she picks up the phone, her boyfriend's on the phone, and she tells her boyfriend, you crack me up.
Yeah.
And then you should see the kid's face. Yeah. You should see the kid's face. I think that is the crucial moment where he decides, okay, my babysitter can never love me. I'm not a special person to her. Mm. Whereas he just thought, you crack me up is the most wonderful compliment I think you can give a person.
extreme.
Yeah. And 25 seconds later, she just uses the sentence again and directs it to another person.
Yeah. You know, and so going back to role reversals, it's like I do believe that this movie was crafted so that the audience would sympathize with the kids, or at least for sure Lucas, because, you know, Garrett is just a sort of a sidekick. We don't have to necessarily get into his head. But we're definitely supposed to be like, oh, poor kid, he can't have sex with his babysitter, which is ridiculous to say.
Because he's 12.
Exactly, ridiculous to think that. But I think that it's crafted for us to do that, you know, to have that feeling.
Absolutely.
And then when, as he's going through this whole thing, and then, of course, when the home invasion begins, you know, we're thinking like, oh, man, maybe he's going to save her and maybe he's going to at least get a kiss or something, you know, because, of course, you know, he's 12 and maybe all he really wants is a kiss. And we give him the benefit of the doubt all the time. We put our faith in him. And the funny thing is we don't put our faith in the babysitter, even though she does sort of pick up on the mushrooms on the pizza. She picks up on like, oh, is that your mask that the home invader is wearing? You know, and it's like, and then she sees him scratch himself and she's like, that was Garrett for sure. So she picks up on a lot of shit and she manipulates him as best she could. But I think as an audience, for sure, me, I was like, this chick is dumb. She's like, and it's intentional that the creators are making us feel this, I believe, because although she's intelligent and she's moving to Pittsburgh out of this shitty town where she lives, I guess it's shitty, I don't know, and she seems to be making moves and she's in a better position. She's blonde hair, blue eye, and her boyfriend Ricky is like, oh, it's great that you're going to college. You know, I don't have any of that, you know? So she's definitely not like a, you know, poor downtrodden person. So, but the point is that, you know, we don't have faith in her, but she's sort of intelligent and she puts things together and she's thoughtful and she notices things, but she makes mistakes and that costs her in the end.
Absolutely. Because the first thing she does is an irresponsible thing. She phones her mother and tells her a lie. Yes, I've got my headphones on. No, she has not got her headphones on. She is on the phone while she's driving, and it's snowing. And
it starts out with lies.
Yeah, streets are full of snow, and being on the phone doing that, well, not the most responsible babysitter. And then there is another moment where she's irresponsible, where she herself drinks alcohol, and then allows as a deal the kid to drink alcohol as well, so he won't tell on her.
Yeah.
So that is why in the first minutes of that movie we think, well, the kid, the angel-faced kid, is the nice person and the babysitter is maybe responsible or, well, as you said, maybe dumb.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that she does start out with all these traits that we associate with, you know, irresponsibility. She lies to her mother right from the beginning. Her mother is like, oh, are you really babysitting tonight or are you going to go sneak out with Ricky? And so there's all those things that she says and does and that we hear about her that, you know, kind of, I thought she was dumb or she was acting dumb in the beginning was because she's like, when the home invasion comes, first of all, she's like, I'm going to go upstairs and see what that noise was upstairs. You guys dial 911. If I don't come back, press send. And she goes upstairs, of course. And then when they finally realize that somebody is attacking them and they need to call 911, she's like, call 911. And of course the phones are out, right? I don't know how the kid manages to get his cell phone.
Oh, okay.
Because there was a cell phone there. Somebody had a cell phone, and the kid, like, I think it was Garrett, he couldn't get signal. Who knows what he did?
Yeah, I think he lied.
Garrett was still in on it, right.
Yeah.
So, but the thing is that she's like...
He threw her phone into an aquarium.
Oh, that,
So... there would only be one other phone there.
Even though
Garrett,
that phone was
Garrett's phone, and Garrett was still in on it. Yeah. So he lied about it.
Yeah. And then, so this, what I was, why I think she's kind of could be looked at as being dumb is because she's like, do something to the internet, get the internet back to, she's telling Garrett, she's like, you know, do your nerdy magic or whatever. And I'm like, nerdy magic, like this girl is not like from the fucking 80s. Like she knows about the internet and stuff like that. It doesn't work like that. If it's out, it's out. So she would be like, go check the router. She would at least know that. She's not a fucking Luddite. She has a cell phone. She must have connected to Wi-Fi before. But anyway, she also is like, there's another thing that she does that in terms of technology that I just don't think would... Oh, yeah. Her phone, I'm assuming that she has an iPhone.
Yes.
You can throw an iPhone in the water and take it out and still make a call. I don't know if that's common knowledge.
There is a prop mismatch there. She says, do you know what that thing cost? When she was talking about her phone after he threw it into the aquarium, and she says 8 plus. And what they pull out of the water later so you think it was an iPhone 8 plus.
Oh.
Which is a new generation. What they pull out of the water is an iPhone 5.
Didn't catch that.
I could be wrong here.
Okay.
It could be that she meant 8, it cost her 8 plus. I don't know if that is,
maybe.
If people say that.
It could be. I love that we can talk about language like on this level, but I don't think that that's something.
So it's
that,
not an iPhone 8 Plus, and the iPhone 5 was not waterproof.
That would be interesting to write down and talk about in the next episode so we can go check. Because that one, I have no idea if I didn't hear her say anything like that.
I didn't know if I just had never heard this expression. It cost me 8 plus.
I mean, she could be saying 800 plus. You know, $800 or more. It just seems a little bit,
She says 8 plus. No real syntax around the 8 plus. So you have to think, okay, it's iPhone model 8 plus, and it isn't. So the prop would just be wrong.
Yeah. So. I feel like this talking about this movie makes me like very excited because I think it's great. I think we're going to take a break in a minute, but just want to say that Daniel is the one that came up with this whole idea. It's an amazing idea that there's this whole like, I mean, he didn't come up with the idea that this stuff exists, but like to look at it and analyze it and how fun that could be, is that there is like this huge body of work that is based on the whole babysitter babysat dynamic, and even within the genre of horror or slashers or whatever, there's a lot, you know, and that's I think this is going to be a great series if we keep doing it. We've jumped around from like, you know, beginning to end of this movie. Maybe when we come back from the break we can talk about things in a little bit more chronological way, but I think we can also just jump around a little bit more after the break as well. What do you think?
If you know how to not jump around, that'd be great.
I don't.
I just want
to. You haven't been listening to the podcasts.
I don't.
They're all jumping around.
Yeah, I know. I just want to jump to the end of the movie to the poster on his wall.
Nope.
The poster.
I got a lot of notes about the end.
Poster says, "Video games made me do it."
Oh my god, that is amazing! I love it.
Yep.
I love it, and it's referring back to the 80s and 90s horror slashers and stuff, and also like the stuff that was going on at those times politically in the world or whatever, because like it's like video games, it's like. Were an excuse for all sorts of bad behavior, and heavy metal music was a big excuse as well.
And I think at the beginning, I might be wrong here. Garrett is playing a video game.
Yep. And so they're talking in the beginning that he's playing some kind of video game, and he's like saying how great he is at this game. And Luke. Yeah, he is talking about how fear creates a chemical reaction in the brain or starts a chemical reaction in the brain that releases dopamine, the pleasure drug or whatever, the pleasure chemical or whatever it's called. So fear causes pleasure, he thinks. And he's like, I told you. And then his friend Garrett is like, are you telling me that fear actually makes girls wet? And it's like, okay, you know, and these little things make me want to slap these kids across the face and be like, you know, because I used to be stupid. Okay, used to be stupid is an exaggeration. But I used to be stupid in that way where I would be, you know, like talking about women like that, like in such a vulgar way without thinking about it. And I want to slap the kid in the face, but all the subsequent things, you start making excuses for them.
Yeah, but and the best excuse for them is the great pun that comes after this.
After the wet, the after fear this, makes girls.
Yeah, because Garrett doesn't notice that Luke's mother stands in the door and he says, yeah. Man, I hope you get some ass. And then he sees the mother yeah. and goes on as assistance with yeah. that computer problem you got.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool things like a lot of cool lines that they do, a lot of funny parts, and especially when Lucas becomes the real Lucas, like in what I call part two of the movie, then all the kind of funny lines are coming out even more, and Lucas has most of them. But I think that's where we should take a break. I think I know where I want to start when we come back, but let's take a break. All right, bye. We are back. Are we back, Daniel? I think we're back. So I wanted to bring up something that is hilarious to me. It really shows how this movie is multidimensional. It's not just a horror movie. It's a comedy. We're even like kind of duped into thinking that it's some kind of a romantic, you know, kind of like love story. But yeah. Before I get into that, Daniel wanted to say something about the production of the movie and who produced this movie? Who produced it, Daniel? Or what countries was it produced in?
The main country involved is Australia. It's an Australian movie, and that is something you would never guess. I was really astonished when I read that. The three main characters are Australians, and you don't hear any of
Australian
that.
Actors.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, you don't hear any of that.
Nope.
So I thought, whoa. And then I saw that it was shot in Sydney. And I thought, well, where did they get the snow from? The movie begins with snow and the Illinois license plates.
Yeah.
And so there might be some scenes that were shot in Illinois, but yeah. most of the movie was shot in Sydney. Mm. And that's something... It feels so American. I don't really know.
Is the writer Australian?
No, the writer is from Los Angeles.
Oh, okay, maybe that's why. And then what about the director? Did we figure that out?
Nope, no, we didn't.
Okay, but we have time. We have
because there is an E in his name.
An E. Oh, I don't get that. Guess.
the letter E is in his name, but that's the only thing I remember about.
But
that
that's
name.
Like a Wheel of Fortune thing. It's like could be anything. All right, so I just wanted to say like one of the things that made me crack up, and it's got nothing to do with anything in this movie, except maybe showing a little bit about the weird character of the parents and the weird personalities that they have. So it's Christmas, right? And they are preparing to go out to some kind of work function, I think, like for one of their jobs. And it's like a dinner and whatever. And before they leave and before the babysitter, Ashley, comes, the parents are downstairs talking. And the father comes out. They're talking about like the Christmas tree decorations. This is too funny for me. And it's a little bit. Some people might say it's homophobic. I don't think so. I think it's kind of it's extremely funny, but he comes out and he's like he comes out with a box and he's talking about the Christmas decorations and he says to his wife, he's like, I just noticed that you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, I just noticed that none of my ornaments are on the tree. None of my Christmas ornaments are on the tree.
My Christmas ornaments are conspicuously missing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So this is like something that's obviously happened before. And she's, and then she, her response to him is, do you know what her response is?
Are you sure you've never sucked another man's cock?
And this cracks me up to like, as I think about it. And the father, like, I swear to God, there must have been a line that he was scripted to say, but then this actor, who is a quite funny comedian, and he's known, I don't know his name, but he's known, like, by his face, because he has these, like, squinty eyes, and he's, like, a giant, he's a large man. So he looks like the kind of guy who wouldn't want to have little ballerina shoes as a Christmas ornament on his Christmas tree. But he picks up the Christmas ornament, and it's like little ballerina shoes, and he says something. I don't even understand what he says.
Am I allowed to like gay things?
Yeah, he says that for sure. And he's also like, what do you mean? Because I'm a metrosexual? And then yeah. She's like,
yeah.
What? And she's like, that's not even a thing. It's metrosexual. And anyway, that whole exchange, to me, it helps the movie a little bit to make us to reinforce this idea that this house is not so tightly run, like almost anything can happen. And I really think that it helps the movie, but it's obviously got nothing to do with anything that's going on.
Well, it has, because really? Yeah, if their relationship is not very healthy, as it seems to be, it isn't. That means the mother will have focused on the boy more than she will have focused on her husband, because she actually hates her husband because she thinks he's a clown and she thinks he's gay.
Well, I wouldn't say she hates him. I don't know where you get that from. Like, what makes you think she hates him?
Who would say such a sentence to his husband?
It's very true. And that's what makes me laugh.
That was my perspective. I mean, what woman would say such a sentence to her husband?
Yeah, no, I get that.
Are you sure you've never sucked another man's cock, not even in college?
But he doesn't... Oh, and by the way, I forgot to finish what I was saying about, like, I think that he was scripted to say something, but the actor chose to just look at her in silence and be like, did you just ask me that question? You know, and it's like, he's not offended. He's not, like, angered by her, you know, outright saying that, like, he might be homosexual. He's just like, what, I can't like gay things, like you said. And it's like, to me, that's kind of endearing about the father. But he also kind of comes on to the babysitter. He's like, when he answers the door right after this scene, she's like, he says to her, to the babysitter, he's like, you look stunning, or something like that. And I'm like, that's what you say the first thing you see the babysitter? And then he compliments her sweater, and they start talking about the fact that she's about to move, and I think he says, he's like, oh, you didn't think to tell me?
No.
Something like that.
He says, did I give you permission?
Oh, okay, that's, yeah. So that is a little pervy to me. That's a little bit, like, creepy and gross, but...
But wherever there is, that's the connection, wherever there's an Oedipus complex, the relationship between the parents can't be that good.
So I just wanted to make sure to get that in, just because I thought it was, like, very, and apparently it's more important than I thought, because the way you analyzed it, like, I didn't think of that stuff at all. But for sure, there's the mother, this mother son relationship is pretty fucked up. I'm looking at my pink cards now, just like, yeah, I mean,
there is another scene where you get the impression that the talk between this husband and his wife is never in a friendly way. At the end of the movie, she tells him that something he did wasn't even funny, and a woman and a man didn't think it funny what he did or said, and he says, oh, they're just being cunts. And she says, what? And he says, nothing.
I didn't pick up on that. I love that. Yeah, they have very minimal dialogue, the parents, but I think it's strong. It's like, you know, it's like it does carry a lot more than I originally thought anyway. I think a lot of it is funny, and I thought it was like more like comic relief, but they are kind of like hinting at certain psychological things that are happening in that house. There's so many things, so many crazy things to do with the parents. I mean, like, I don't know if he's lying, if Lucas is lying at this point when he tells that, when he tells Garrett that he's drugged the babysitter Ashley with OxyContin. He's like, he says it, and he tells Garrett like, "Oh, I should have used half a dose, or I should have used only half."
Wait! He has drugged Garrett with Oxy. That's why he's on that scooter and saying "wee."
No, but Oxy would make you pass out. It would make you sleepy.
Well,
no,
he falls down on the couch.
Oh, and he falls on the marshmallows.
And says, wow, this is so great!
Oh my God, I totally missed that.
Marshmallows everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere.
Yeah,
I thought that was bizarre.
And then,
but he's telling Garrett that he gave the Oxy to the girl.
No, no, no. Garrett says, "This stuff is great. What's it called?" And then he says,
"Oh,
it's called Oxy."
My God.
Maybe I should have given you half a dose.
Holy shit! I totally miss.
Yeah, he gave Garrett the Oxy because Garrett wasn't in on what Luke actually planned, and of course he was shocked when Luke knocked down the babysitter and sent her down the stairs. And well, to calm him down, he gives him Oxy.
Okay.
Whatever Oxy does to you,
OxyContin is like an opiate. It's like if something makes you basically want to kind of cuddle up to a giant pillow and mush your face into it, I guess.
That's what he does, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, he's like super happy about the OxyContin, whatever. I thought that it was because he thought he was so cool to have given it to her, but apparently he gave it to Garrett. Yeah, I mean, at that point in the movie, they're like full-on, like, rapey, fucked-up kids, and, you know, but we don't know at that point that, or at least I believe that we're not really sure what the intentions of Luke are, which we find out, of course, I think. I mean, it's still up for dispute. What, did he want to kill her or have sex with her? And I think you brought up a good point that, you know, he did want to have sex with her, and maybe that would have derailed this whole murder, quadruple murder, you know, that he set up to make look like a triple murder suicide. So he committed. So at the end of this movie, which we haven't even discussed yet, at the end of this movie, he believes that he has gotten away with a quadruple murder, that he is framing an ex-boyfriend for, the crime of triple murder. And suicide. Not that suicide is a crime, but so he, by the time we get to the end, we think that he's gotten away with this kind of this framing. But what happens at the end?
And then the first set of credits rolls?
And no. Before the credits roll.
Oh, before the credits roll.
Yeah. So we think that he's gotten away with it. He's sleeping.
The first set of credits roll, and then there is a break in the credits.
Yeah, but first we have to mention that. What? So the kid thinks that he's gotten away with it. We think he's gotten away with it. He's cuddling up with his mom now.
Yeah.
And his father is giving a report to the police. So, you know, the parents have come home now. He looks like he's been sleeping the whole time. They come home to this multiple murder. And later, which I was...
Right.
So basically...
And
the father's giving this report to the police, and then we find out that
one is still alive.
Yes, exactly. And the one that's still alive is Ashley. And how did she survive? And this shows again her intelligence.
Yeah.
How did she survive? Do you remember?
1001 uses for duct tape.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
The sentence he says when he tapes her mouth.
Yep.
At the end, she uses that duct tape.
That exact same piece, right?
To seal her wound, the stab wound.
Yeah, and so I think that she used the same piece of tape that he gagged her with to cover up, right?
So this 1001 uses for duct tape was actually foreshadowing do with it afterwards.
I mean,
that was quite clever.
I wouldn't say foreshadowing is clever. It's a basic tool, but you know, it was a good foreshadowing.
Still clever.
It was a good foreshadowing. Yeah, okay. I mean, I feel like I've given a lot of credit to this movie already. I mean, I honestly, every time I think I come up with some kind of a so-called plot hole, I can fill it up with something quite easily.
Yes, that is so astonishing, because when you watch it two times, three times, everything that you questioned about this, is there a continuity flaw there?
Yeah.
Nope, there is not.
Yeah, it's insanely well-crafted.
Yeah.
And there's, I mean, from the intentions of the kid, whatever you believe they are, to the behavior of, you know, everybody in that movie, like, it all can get tied up. One thing is clear, though, about his intentions, to me, is that, you know, which Garrett is definitely a clueless about. Garrett thinks that this is his best friend, right? And that they're sharing this experience, right? But no. Anytime that Garrett is like, I want a piece of this action, you know,
or
he's
of
like...
this girl.
Or of this girl, yeah. I'm sorry. I mean, it's hard not to objectify women when you talk about this movie, because it's like, it's objectifying women, obviously, but that's the whole point. Anyway, he says, she's my babysitter. You don't touch her. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
This dude is insane. And, oh yeah, there's a part where...
He means she's my mother. You don't touch her. That's actually
more or less
what he would like to say.
Yeah, more or less. I mean... There's also a part where, like, at that moment when they're, like, arguing who gets to sexually assault her, she intelligently uses knowledge about Luke that she has that Garrett doesn't have. She uses it to her advantage. She says, like, oh, you don't want me to tell Garrett about the time that you killed his hamster? And then they have, like, a whole kerfuffle about it.
Yeah.
And... that's also right there, like when Garrett starts to like lose sort of his
loyalty.
Yeah,
but we are tricked into thinking that he will lose his loyalty, but he actually never does. I don't think he ever.
He gets shot for it.
Yes, but
with a shotgun.
I know, but I'm not really sure if he really tries to untie her, because it seems so clumsy. But that may be.
Oh, you think that maybe he was. Maybe he was like trying to like finally get something from her, like what he thought.
I'm not really sure if he actually wants to save her.
Mm.
That funny thing is the last thing Garrett says.
I want my mom.
I want my mom.
But he doesn't get to finish it because he gets shot a second time with the shotgun. I wrote that down here.
Yeah.
So we have some notes that were the same, some notes that were different. I think this is amazing because like there were certain things that I was thinking about that you filled in, and then there were certain things that I didn't even come close to thinking about that you brought up, which is the whole point of having these kinds of conversations. Man, I have like so much other stuff, so many other things to say. Oh, he at one point refers to Ricky. Oh, we didn't talk so much about Ricky. It's such an important part of the movie.
No, and about Jeremy as well.
Jeremy, yeah, because the whole thing hinges. Oh, and that's why I think that if... So the whole thing, if you ask me, hinges on the ex-boyfriend coming around and being the final guy that comes there, you know, into this murder house. Because... he is the alibi. He is the friend. He is the guy who gets framed for this. So if Lucas was actually able to, you know, get successfully kill everybody, which he doesn't, then this would all be pinned on Jeremy, and he tricks in a genius move by the writers and by the character. In a genius move, he tricks the guy into writing his own suicide note. Love that. I am like, I love that. And yeah, I mean, I just really think that is one of the things that makes me think that it was all planned this way and he never wanted to have sex with her. But so we didn't talk about Ricky either. You know, Ricky is lured there by Luke, where we originally think that she is the one who texted him to come, but actually it wasn't. And when Garrett figures this out, he's like, you texted Ricky? You brought this other person into this situation? Now we're really fucked. And Luke is like, yeah, don't worry. it's okay. I have it all planned out.
Yeah.
And so Garrett is totally clueless all the time. And at one point, so he definitely hates all these people, if you ask me, or he just is such a psycho that he just thinks they're... I really think it's about hate, but maybe he's just... These are his playthings, and like you said in the beginning, yeah. It's an experiment. But
it's a science experiment.
Yeah, but he calls Ricky a grease monkey. He calls him a mongrel. And then he gives him a nickname. Do you
Mongo,
remember?
I think. Mongrel.
Mongrel. What did I say? No, mongrel. Mongrel is like a...
I thought he called him a mongo.
No, mongrel.
Are you sure?
What's a mongo? Mongro?
This isn't politically correct.
That's okay.
It's someone with...
Oh, you mean Asian... No.
What's that disease called? There is a politically correct name for that disease, Mongo.
Oh my God, I know what you're talking about. No, but that's not...
Something
you don't say that in English.
Three.
Yeah.
Something 23.
You're talking about Down syndrome.
That's it.
Yeah, but that's not what you say. You say they're like...
Sure, it's
something Mongolian, yeah, some Mongol. But that's very old-timey, politically incorrect.
Let's check that.
Yeah, let's check that. We need to write down all the things we're going to check. But do you remember the nickname he gives to Ricky? Which reminds me of Game of Thrones. I don't know if you know Game of Thrones. This is only for Game of Thrones people. He nicknames Ricky Reeky.
Reeky. Reeky. Yeah, because he
peed on himself.
Yeah.
And this is a nickname that one of the characters in Game of Thrones gives to another character in Game of Thrones who he's torturing. So I think that's even kind of, I really think that it could be a kind of shout out to like the goriness of Game of Thrones and saying like, I love you too. You know, it's like something like that, like a mutual love for gore. Because it's quite gory, this movie. I mean,
there were some scenes, yeah.
I mean, the head exploding paint can thing. I mean,
you don't really see that.
No, but there's like yellow paint and blood that looks like mustard and ketchup.
Yeah.
To me, that's disgusting.
Yeah. That's why
he calls him a hot dog.
Yes.
He's like, you look like a hot
Garrett,
dog.
You look like a hot dog because he's got yellow paint on him. I didn't want to forget one thing about the prop, the phone prop. He is only able to text Ricky, who is the current boyfriend, because from Ashley's phone, because it was in a Ziploc when he threw it into the aquarium.
Oh, wow.
But I watched that scene multiple times, and I can actually not see that the phone is in a Ziploc.
That sounds like a plot hole. Not a plot hole, but like a flaw. Because to me, if it was an iPhone 8 or even 7, it's waterproof.
Yeah, but it isn't. It's an old iPhone. Yeah.
So she was lying. No. Anyway, we don't know what she meant by this whole...
I think he's much richer than she is, so he would actually be the one with the 8 Plus, and she would be the one with the iPhone 5 or 4.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of other stuff that's going on, like maybe you can clear this up for me. I don't know if I got it right. Garrett, in the beginning, when they're talking about, you know, when they're playing video games right before the mother and father are leaving, he says he got some weed, some marijuana from his father or his brother?
I thought cousin, but maybe I'm wrong about
it. We need to check that out, too. But
He smokes that later on.
Yeah, he smokes it later on, and Luke gets angry. And because it's not part of the plan, and then Luke tries to get or gets... Ricky to smoke it, so it looks like he was the one who was smoking the weed. I don't think that the crime people, the detectives and the police in that town have the ability to do all the kind of things that, you know, all the kind of evidence gathering that he thinks or that the audience thinks that they are able to do. Because, like, do you really need to force this guy to smoke the weed? I think that a lot of these things are just for us, just for the audience. It's like he could have planned this whole thing out without obsessing about certain details that he does. He gets so thorough that I think that even for movies that are, you know, about murder, he's extremely thorough. And then in for real life, I think he's even more thorough, because it's like all the details of how he sets up this multiple murder suicide.
And how he cleans it up.
And how he cleans it up. It's just extremely detailed. And yeah, I mean, there's something to be said about the, you know, the skills and abilities of this kid, and like his planning as being like one huge aspect of the movie. Like, and
yeah, he's like most people with an Oedipus complex, he's OCD, I would say.
Yes, he is OCD, right?
At the beginning, when Garrett puts his socks on his bed.
Oh,
and
I missed
he
that.
Shoves the socks off.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And he freaks out when Ricky pees himself.
Yes, absolutely.
And he calls him a mongrel or Mongol or whatever. And he screams and he screeches on, and his voice cracks.
Yeah.
He's like, I forget what he says, but it's hilarious how many times his voice cracks. I just want to say now that after... So I think that, well, we're definitely towards the end of the podcast, but we're also sort of... We've gone through a lot of the movie, and I think that... We have yet to say what comes after those credits that you were talking about. We have yet to say that. So we got to the whole "this one's still alive" thing. So we know Ashley's alive. What does she do when he's looking out the window?
Yeah, she gives him
the finger. She gives him the finger.
And there was one other scene where she does that.
Mm.
But I don't really remember when that was. There was someone in front of the window? No.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that are like followed up on, like a lot of reoccurring elements, foreshadowing. A lot of that stuff is going on. A lot of this stuff can be looked at as being basic stuff, but the way that they use it and the quantity of stuff that are like this that they're using is really enjoyable, to say the least. So she gives him the finger, and then we hear the medics talking about, oh man, she had a really bad stab wound. She covered it up, and they're talking to each other. She covered up with duct tape. That saved her life. Smart girl. All this shit, you know. There's something called the final girl. It's like the final girl is like a concept that's in horror movies. It's like the last girl who's like running and running and running, and she is sort of like that, but to use like, you know, a literary reference, she's more of the Odysseus of that kind of category of hero, because she is not running and running and running. She's like staying there trying to figure out, using her intelligence to battle this thing. And she seems dumb, but actually I really think that she's very smart. And so when he finds this out, he's watching her through the window, and she's there down at the ambulance. His mother comes up behind him and hugs him, and then the credits roll, and we think that the movie's over. And one not even a scene shows up after the credit, after, like, in between the credits. And what does he say?
He says, "Mom, I'm worried about Ashley. We should go to the hospital."
Yeah. Cut to black, or cut to credits again. Yeah. And so, to me, this is a never-ending story.
Yeah,
this is a never-ending film.
This actually calls out for a sequel, and
without a doubt,
they will probably have done that, because they might have thought, well, if the movie is a success, we'll just make a sequel.
I mean, I looked at the IMDb thing. I don't know how successful it was, but I would love if they came out with a second one.
Yeah, because the actors are very good. I have to say that. The three Australian main character actors are...
Garrett is Australian. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Garrett. Yeah. Yes.
Garrett, Luke, and Ashley.
Yes, they're really good. And by the way, Ashley and Garrett can also be seen in another babysitter movie with a great role reversal.
I can't remember the name
of
it.
The Visit by M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah.
That is those two.
That could be one of the ones we talk about. I mean, definitely will be. So we're going to follow up with another episode of this. It's about time that we finish the podcast. We're going to follow up with more talk about... in the next episode, maybe not the next episode, but in a future episode, we're going to talk more about Better Watch Out. We're going to talk about The Babysitter, and we're going to talk
about
which
is a Netflix movie.
And then we're also going to talk about The Visit, which I have to rewatch. I mean, I'll rewatch all of these as many times as I have to. I can talk about them all day. Just one thing, I totally forgot that he actually admits that he never was going to let her go. He actually admits it. She says to him...
In what way?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it could
as
be...
As his lover or as his corpse?
Oh. Yeah. Either way, I think that his plan was started way before the movie. So, like, I think that his planning was, like, maybe when he was 10 years old. I think he started planning... I'm just throwing that out there as a number. I think he started planning this shit when he was 10 years old, watching movies, watching horror movies.
Watching Home Alone.
Watching Home Alone and playing video games because the video games made
me do
it.
Right?
So he planned all this shit out. He gained all this knowledge and he uses the internet. So he figured all this shit out. And finally, when she was about to leave, he was like, I have to do this tonight. And he gets Garrett to go along with it. And then at the end, it's a never ending. The story continues. Whether they make a sequel or not, we know that he and she are going to be locked in an eternal battle between good and evil.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think,
it's also because, of course, no thriller, horror, whatever movie is good with a happy ending. You just wouldn't like that.
Yeah, I agree. It's always got to go to the next level, and the next level is always, more gore. So I think with that,
we have a happy ending here.
I mean, we're gonna go drink some beer. Thank you, Daniel, for being here, man.
Yeah,
I really appreciate it. I mean, the concept of this particular show is basically your idea. I really appreciate you collaborating with me on this, and we should just keep going. So, thanks, man.
Absolutely. Can I say one last thing?
Of course.
Well, as we see in most of these babysitter movies, the menace doesn't come from the outside. Mm. And it's like in most of these movies. And so, if you lock your door tonight, think of that.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So till next time, this has been Voices from the Dark.